This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I have a very high expectation of what I've always thought this franchise is, and that was the best franchise in sports.
In the moments where we are down, as players, we got to execute. Every day, I'm so fortunate to be a part of this team.
This is 49ers Plus Minus.
Hey everybody, Tim Kawakami here, 49ers Plus Minus, emergency new defensive coordinator episode with co-host Matt Barros. The 49ers haven't announced it yet. I'm sure there has been no official comment from them, but news breaking early this morning. At some point in the dawn hours that 49ers are going to promote Nick Sorensen, the defensive coordinator, from in-house, and they're going to bring on Brandon Staley, I guess, as assistant head coach slash whatever, kind of a combo compromise sort of thing, Barros. What's your take on this kind of double slot defensive staff coordinator or head coach hiring?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. They're sort of getting they'll spin it that they're getting the best of both worlds here. The guy they promote with it from within so that they can continue the system that they've been running all these years. You're not going to have the Steve Wilks sort of hiccup with a newcomer calling the shots. And Sorensen's interesting, and we can get into that in a little bit. You and I talked about him in our last podcast. I think we saw this coming, that he was going to be the hire. The curveball here is that they hired Staley as well, and Staley kind of brings in the new ideas. And I think from a practical day-to-day perspective, you know, what's he going to do during practice? You had Wilks and Sorensen working with the DBs in previous years, along with Daniel Bullocks. Wilks is gone. Sorensen now has the DC job. So my guess is that, you know, when you watch a 49ers practice, you're going to see Brandon Staley hanging out with the DBs a lot, probably hanging out with the linebackers a lot. That's what his background is as a linebackers coach. So he could be a guy that has a couple of hats, which is what Sorensen's had in the past. I think that's what made him a attractive candidate to them. He's done a little bit of everything in the past, which has given him a better zoomed out view of how this defense works.
With relationship with Fred Warner, maybe even with a defensive line, do you feel like this is a guy that Fred Warner would say, yeah, hey, this is the guy I want calling the signals on the sideline? Is that close of a relationship?
Yeah, I mean, when Johnny Holland was dealing with his health issue a couple of years ago, Sorensen was the day-to-day linebackers coach. So he's worked really closely with Fred Warner. He's worked really closely with Dre Greenlaw. I've been making some phone calls today about his ex-coaches, people who've worked with Sorensen in the past. He's not a rah-rah guy. Yeah. He's not D'Amico Ryans. He's a more kind of steady, dispassionate, smart and cerebral, He's not going to be the guy that's chest bumping Dre Greenlaw coming off the field after a sack. That's just not who he is. What he is a guy, like I said, I think the Johnny Holland scenario is a perfect case in point about who Sorensen is. The 49ers needed somebody to coach linebackers, on short notice. And the guy that they turned to was Nick Sorensen because he's smart enough, experienced enough to do that. He played linebacker at Virginia Tech, for example. I'll give you another example. In 2021, he was an assistant defensive coach with the Jaguars. All of a sudden, the Jaguars had to find a new special teams coordinator because Brian Schneider, who's now the 49ers coordinator, left abruptly, middle of the season. And so who did they tap for that role? Nick Sorensen. And he'd never done it before. He'd been an assistant coach back in Seattle maybe about 10 years earlier on the special teams side of things. But my point is that this is the guy that people have a lot of trust in to, fill in when needed. And, he's never been a DC before, but that's sort of why the 49ers feel like he's the right choice for this job.
And, me saying this, but I'm the one who kept throwing out Jeff Ulbrich's name. It does feel like Ulbrich would have fit, that you could hire one person for that job. It would have been Jeff Ulbrich. And they don't get him, and they want the next D'Amico Ryan. Steve Wilks didn't work, so they got to hire two people. I kind of feel like we're not quite sure on either one of them, and I'm pretty sure they did not want Brandon Staley doing weekly press conferences and calling the plays and being on the sideline. So they kind of halved it with both, maybe. And let's get two guys, and maybe one of them together would be the guy. Is that too critical a look at this? Like they did hire two guys, and they had one guy there before.
Well, I don't think there's any question that Jeff Ulbrich would have been the perfect candidate, and that they looked at Ulbrich and that they were told, no, you cannot have Ulbrich. I heard it. This is hearsay, and I don't even know whether he said this in jest or whether it was serious, but apparently Robert Saleh said, hey, if I give you Jeff Ulbrich, I want a first and a second round pick in return. I mean, it was a silly scenario. It was never going to happen. I do think that the 49ers looked at it because, as you said, perfect in so many ways. Could come in, could be a leader, has done it before. He checked every box. It's from the South Bay, played for the 49ers. There's a great picture of Ulbrich being one of the guys who's carrying Bryant Young off the field after Young set the franchise's sack record. I forget what year it was, 2008, let's call it. He was around for a decade and was a favorite of the coaches. So I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I don't think there's any sort of defense for that. They didn't get the ideal, pie in the sky candidate. And this is sort of the plan B approach, but, you can see the logic behind it. I think that Staley will probably have some roles almost like Sorensen had, in previous seasons. Sorensen ran, for example, the takeaway meeting that they have every week. I can see Brandon Staley having carving out a role or a meeting per week where he talks about something very specific. Either to that week's game plan or to something in general, like takeaways.
Yeah, and you can see Staley almost having kind of a larger picture role as just someone who can talk to Kyle Shanahan, former coach. Probably got along with Kyle when they talked. Thoughtful guy. He's been on McVay's staff. Has gone up against this offense. Kind of Shanahan wants to pick his brain a little bit. Is not stuck in a linebackers meeting every time. He can walk around a little bit. He can sit in Kyle's office. I'm not the biggest Brandon Staley fan in the whole world, but he's a smart guy. I think he proved he was a really good coordinator in 1 year of doing it with the Rams. But kind of like a guy that Kyle could bounce things off of and maybe have his own things. And I think Staley has too many of his own things. I don't love his own things. And I really don't think they wanted him doing press conferences. I want to underline that's why I didn't think it was going to be Staley to be DC, because they just didn't want that guy talking publicly. And Shanahan's very aware of this stuff. Like, he knew when he put Mike McDaniel out there. I've asked him, like, did you know it was going to become a sensation? He goes, hell yeah, absolutely. I didn't think it was going to be quite like that, but I knew it was going to be something that people would be attracted to. There would be focus on him because he's so interesting. Did not want the same thing with Staley. You could go on down the line on some of the other candidates. I don't think he wanted a Mike Vrabel thing every Wednesday. Oh my God, Mike Vrabel time. Let's talk to Mike. You know, he didn't want that. But Staley could be in there, right? I mean, I think Kyle would be, and I think John Lynch would really be attracted to, like, you know, have a somebody who's got his thing and, you know, would kind of be able to push back on Kyle a little bit. I don't know that Shanahan is always looking for that, but I can see he could see the value in that, Barrels.
Yeah, I mean, it's the idea of new ideas and how do you evolve this defense. And Lynch had a great example, which was the, you know, implementation of the wide nine back in, I forget what it was, 2020. I forget when this, maybe the year before, 2019.
Yeah.
You know, that's not something that Robert Saleh wanted. It didn't fit what, you know, the 49ers had done in the past, what the Seahawks had done in the past. But they figured out a way to marry that with this defense, make it unique, and make it effective. It was very effective in 2019. It hasn't been quite as effective since then because they haven't been able to find a second defensive end. That's for another topic, Tim. We'll go into the draft in coming weeks and things like that. Yeah, it's another brain in the building. I think Nick Sorensen is going to enjoy having that as well. I mean, from talking to people, I think he's somebody that really kind of enjoys the X's and O's part of it, the scheming, wants to know the whys, all that stuff. So I think that's going to end up being part of the 49ers spiel on this when they finally talk to us about why they made the move. I think that they not only like the Brandon Staley Shanahan duo, but I think that the Staley Sorensen also promises to work well.
You got to imagine Sorensen down on the field, Staley up top. I mean, yeah. God figures that would be it. I don't think they're going to want Staley around the defensive line very much. And that just might be me. I just don't see that. I don't like.
You think that Nick Bosa is going to pick a fight with him at some point?
Just I like, just think he's going to
pull out like, ball on the field.
He's just going to say, you go do your thing. I'm not listening to this stuff. I'm going to listen to Chris Kocurek. I think that's how it's going to work. That's how it should work. And then work within that. It's another reason why I didn't think Staley was going to be the DC again. It's like he's got his thing that he does with defensive linemen. It's not a Bosa sort of thing, as Joey Bosa will probably tell you. And I don't think Nick would have been too in tune with, like, let's change up some things for you, Nick, because Brandon Staley says you should. But I do think this is a little bit of a sign that, you know, maybe they were all brick once they fired Wilkes. But if you didn't know you could get him, you couldn't, like, you didn't fire Wilkes knowing you had somebody. I think you maybe needed to do that. We'll see. Maybe he knew Sorensen could do it, and that's always was in his back pocket. Do you get a sense, though, that like they did not really have a 1A candidate, knowing that they couldn't hire Bradley or Gus Bradley, who was the Colts defensive coordinator, Seattle system guy, or Olbrich if the teams wouldn't let them? So you think Shanahan just kind of fired Wilkes and like, okay, let's see? He didn't really have a tight plan about what he was going to do?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, I think I mentioned this last time. It's sort of the Mac Jones situation. You know, worst case scenario that you're going to end up with Nick Sorensen. I think that's somebody that they knew all along that they could promote into that role. And I mean, Diana Rossini reported the other day that they made a play for Steve Spagnuolo.
Yep,
Spags was kind of redoing his contract with the Chiefs. That was dragging on a bit. And so the 49ers said, hey, you know, what's the deal here? Do we have a shot at bringing in, you know, the guy that just thwarted us in the Super Bowl? So, I mean, it was a no-lose situation with Olbrich, with Spagnuolo. Mike Silver today wrote that there was a Bill Belichick inquiry even made. I mean, why not? I mean, what do you have to lose? You're not. There was no race against the clock here. They weren't competing with other teams for candidates. So, you know, I think it was 16-day process, a long time to hire a DC. They kicked the tires on, you know, their ideal candidates. Nothing came loose. And so they ended up with, the guy that they thought that they had on the line all along in Nick Sorensen. So, I mean, I have no idea whether Sorensen is going to be a great defensive coordinator. I think he's going to be different than what they've had in the past, for sure. It didn't work out with Steve Wilks, and we've gone over the reasons why. Sorensen, in a lot of ways, is the opposite. He's the in-house guy. He knows how it works. He's worked with this defense from the inside out over the last few seasons. So, it'll be interesting to watch. It'll be interesting to watch practices to see where Staley goes, to see where Sorensen goes, to see if as you alluded to, Staley sidles up to Kyle Shanahan at different points. That'll be kind of a fascinating sort of subplot to watch during these practices.
I'll tell you what, though, if there's a week five bye and they've had, or week eight bye, let's say, and they've had some struggles on defense, the move won't be to change where Sorensen stands, right? It'll be when Brandon Staley becomes defensive coordinator. Like, they've got 1B sitting right there. And there's another layer to this, right? We know this. There's a good chance that the Jets staff is fired at the end of next season, or even, you know, before the end of the season. And they've got, let's see, Robert Saleh and Jeff Olbert could be available. It just feels like this is kind of like not a hedge bet, but this is like not the all in. Let's see how this goes. And then we've got a lot of options after this one. Maybe that's unfair to Nick Sorensen. Maybe there's something there, the dynamic thing that we'll see. But it does feel like they've kind of got 5 bets out there and they're just waiting to see which one comes in.
Yeah, it's like you're at a restaurant and there's a menu and all these sort of exotic dishes, and you just decide to go with, you know, the chicken parm because it's the safe bet. You know what you're getting. The Jets situation is interesting. I was talking to, you know, some of the Jets writers at the combine, and I said, okay, well, what if Saleh does get fired midseason? Would Olbrich become the interim head coach, and therefore would he have a shot at becoming the Jets' permanent coach in 2025? And they all thought that, and I'm not familiar with it, but that the special teams coach there would probably be the natural fit to take over as the interim guy. So that scenario where both Saleh and Olbrich are available at the end of the season is very much in play.
Any other tidbits from the end of the combine? You're back here now, but they're doing their workouts. Any other buzz? Notebook stuff from Matt Barrows from Indianapolis?
Yeah, I put it all out in a story during the week. I mean, I think we talked about this. There was, you know, more kind of emphasis on re-signing Brandon Ayuk and also re-signing Juwan Jennings. And to me, that's almost the more interesting one because there's a clock on that one. They have to put a tender on him before free agency starts if they're not able to re-sign him. And I imagine them knowing that Jennings was going to be a restricted free agent throughout the season, that this has been broached before with the agent. Let's get a long-term deal done. Sometimes you can get a sweetheart deal done. They got one with Dre Greenlaw, for example, a couple of years ago. Usually when you get this close to the start of free agency, the agent wants to see what the market's like, wants to see what he can get from that.
Yeah, there's no more risk. There's no more risk, right? There's no more injury risk. So, right. Going to market, it's the injury risk that causes these guys to sign, and you can't blame them. But which is what I would put in the Brandon Ayuk thing is, like, would you expect him to play if the 49ers do not give him a new deal? He does have one more year left on his contract, I would not expect him to show up for camp, at least for the first part of camp, if there's no deal. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be like Nick Bosa was this last year. I mean, it's the same scenario. He's playing on his fifth year option. Bosa didn't show up, and the 49ers didn't fine him. They do accumulate fines for skipping camp, and it's just going to be what the team's posture is. But boy, they certainly set a precedent this last year with Bosa and being very kind of acquiescent to him. He didn't come to any of the spring stuff. Didn't show up at the beginning of training camp. This, that, and the other. They didn't fine him. Everything's going to be fine. Everything's going to be fine. We know that he's working out on his own. All that stuff. And then he finally showed up just before the start of the season. I personally don't think that it really affected his season very much. And I think Brandon Ayuk has been the same way in terms of his off-season preparation. It's interesting because it's hard to see the 49ers strong-arming him in that way after they basically went noodle arm with Nick Bosa the year before.
Noodle arm, way to go. You're going into an offseason for the first time with Brock Purdy healthy and your starting quarterback. And I don't know, OTAs can be overrated. We're there covering them and we have to assign some value to them. I think there's some. Like, you know, you would want him working with Brandon Ayuk as much as possible. I don't think he's going to be, because I think Ayuk will be missing those sessions. Might come to minicamp. I think didn't Debo go to minicamp when he was in the contract?
He was there. He didn't take part, around. But he showed up.
Stand around, go through the meetings. What you don't want to do is get hurt in a minicamp when you're, you know, trying to negotiate contract. And I totally understand that. I just don't see Brandon Ayuk going, yeah, you know what? Let me go in and play for my fifth year. But other guys didn't have to, but I will. I don't see that happening. The other flip side is, though, we always go that teams like speed. I don't know that he's going to get these monster offers from some other team. Like, I don't know that they're going to give him the Tyreek Hill deal. I don't think they will. I don't think he's going to. Devontae Adams is not a speed guy either, but he has just monster production. And he got it from the Raiders, right? He couldn't get it from anywhere else. He got it from the Raiders. I just don't know that some team's going to go, you know what? Let's give up a top 15 pick, top 12 pick for Brandon Ayuk, and knowing we're going to have to pay him $25 million a year. The team that's most willing, in my mind, to pay him $22-24 million a year is the 49ers. Like, that's the team. So they would do that, and without having to give up a first-round pick. I just see a deal there. I don't know when it's going to happen. It's always crazy that it has to go to the very last moment or into training camp, but that's when teams and players make deals and agents. I agree. I don't know that he's – I can't see him signing – I can't see him playing on his fifth year, just play that because of the injury risk. What if he gets hurt playing in his fifth year? And then what do they do? And it's a high cap number. They could reduce it by giving him a long-term contract. All those things make me think this will happen. Obviously, there could be sweat and trade demands or trade requests or whatever else could happen. I just don't see that moving around. I did see today Tyron Smith was released by the Cowboys, left tackle. Very talented one, has been hurt a ton. We keep talking tackle for the 49ers. I think we said last week I did not see a free agent tackle out there that I really think could upgrade the 49ers. Well, this is one. If he can play right tackle, and he's definitely a potential replacement for Trent. Well, now he's not much younger than Trent Williams, so maybe he's 33. But do you see the 49ers taking a swing? I think they're going to take a swing at somebody, Barros. I really do. I was thinking pass rusher because I think there's tackles in the draft, but could you see them taking a swing at somebody like Tyron Smith?
I mean, even Tyron Smith, who's, as you noted, has been injured a lot in recent seasons. He's in his mid-30s. He's still going to command. David and I are working on our build-your-own roster project that we do every year, where fans can come in and basically map out what the 49ers off-season looks like, who they add. You just have to be under the cap. Even someone like him, we're talking $10 to $12 million contract. He's sort of on the lower end of, let's say the top five tackles who are going to be available. And I'm with you. None of those tackles certainly jumps out to me, as a household name. He's the most prominent of the group, but some of these younger guys who are just finishing up their rookie contracts, guys who pretty much have struggled up until you know, the last season. And in that case, they were merely adequate. You know, we're talking $15, $16 million a year. I mean, that's how rare that position is. So, I mean, it's hard for me to see them doing that, just given what their track record has been like at offensive line and tackle. I mean, we're willing to spend, you know, a lot of money on a center. We're willing to spend a lot of money on a left tackle, but that's it. I mean, the other three spots, we're going to go budget. And we saw that with Mike McGlinchey. I mean, they were not even willing to have that conversation with Mike McGlinchey, and not many people were satisfied with Mike McGlinchey fan wise. So, I mean, my guess would be that the 49ers watched Colton McKivitz and said, you know what, that's pretty good. We're going to be okay with that. You know, the bigger question to me is, you know, Trent Williams has said he's coming back for this season. He wants to get that 12th Pro Bowl, which would distinguish him from Orlando Pace and from Anthony Munoz and all the other elite left tackles throughout history. But what happens if he gets that number 12? I mean, is that it? I mean, is he playing for that and then he steps away from the game? He's definitely talked about retirement. It's on his mind. When's the right time for him to go? If you do that, then, you got nobody in the pipeline. You're going to be paying all this money to Brock Purdy. You need to protect that investment. So I think that the draft is probably where they're going to try to go. It's a good tackle draft. But you know, pick number 31, I mean, you can easily see the top five tackles in this draft going well before then, in which case they would have to kind of move up and target a guy. And I think there are guys that fit the mold. But I think I don't know if that's the likeliest scenario, but that's one scenario that they're looking at, going out, targeting a tackle, using their 11 picks to go find that guy who maybe comes in at right tackle as a rookie, but definitely succeeds Trent Williams when Williams finally decides to hang up the cleats.
How good a move was it? Staley's going to retire. They kind of keep that quiet, and they make the trade for Trent Williams at the draft. That's just an amazing – I mean, that's a previous relationship with Kyle. That's the 49ers willing to pay up. Who was it the Chiefs that was in there? Was it the Rams? I can't remember for that trade. Who were there? I know the Chiefs were going to sign him and trying to sign him the next offseason, but they're like giving up a non first round pick to go from Staley to Trent Williams. That is unbelievable move. I mean, that was an all time move. And it's like, it just makes it harder to think how they're going to replace him. Like that kind of move is not going to mean Laramie Tunzel is not coming to you for a second. What third and fifth or whatever it was they got for Trent, they moved for Trent Williams. All time Shanahan, John Lynch move, all time.
And they used Washington's dysfunction. I mean, talk about someone who dealt with that dysfunction, Kyle Shanahan. No love lost for Daniel Snyder. And then Trent Williams has even more animus against that team and they reunite in Washington. So yeah, for sure. I mean, you're right. I mean, at some point that's the challenge that a good team like the 49ers have. You're always picking at the end of the first round. There's never an opportunity to kind of bring in that linchpin tackle anymore. And maybe they whiffed when they had that chance back in 18 with Mike McGlinchey. That would have been the opportunity to do that, to find Trent Williams' heir at that point, or an heir to be the left tackle. But I think you have to bite the bullet at some point and do that. Just the way that they did it for quarterback, or tried to do it for quarterback in 2021. Okay. We know we have to have a rookie quarterback. Let's just put all our eggs in this basket and let's just bite the bullet and get him. And they failed to do that. They were bailed out in the seventh round the next year, but that may be what the 49ers are trying to do. This guy I keep talking about, Tyler Guyton, played in Oklahoma. Trent Williams played at Oklahoma. I mean, there's a lot of reasons that makes sense. He could come in. He wouldn't even have to be the starter in year one. He could learn from Trent Williams and then eventually take over for Trent Williams.
He looks very athletic, looks rangy. Yeah, he looks like someone who could do that. Part of that Trey Lance thing was they were at 12, right? And they just thought, we're not going to be at 12 again, which gives us an easier leverage into the top of the draft. You're sitting at 31, it's almost impossible to get in the top. You know, it is. I mean, we saw how hard it was to get from 12 to 3. Can you imagine how hard it is to get from 31 to, like, 6? It would be 4 first-round picks, whatever it would be. But I would, if I was them, I would not be against giving up to next year's one to go get the if I know I can get the tackle I want. You better know it. Like, you can't as I've said, the problem with the Trey Lance thing is they went up there without knowing for sure who they were going to get. And you kind of got to know there's a guy there. I guess it was Mac Jones, but we know that was the wrong decision. And it was a wrong decision proven by the fact that they didn't take him. But if you really are in love with a tackle, I could give up 2 number ones to go get him, because it would fix so many different things. As I've said, it would fix like 3 positions. Right tackle, move McKivitz to right guard. That's 2. That's a right side of the offensive line. And then he's your guy, potentially, obviously, the leading candidate to replace Trent Williams down the road. That's worth 2 number ones, Barrows. That might be worth 2 number ones and a 2 if you have the right guy. You better get the right guy, right? You better know it's the right guy. And we know they're really good at trading tons of picks and getting the right guy. But this team without Trent Williams, I don't know. I don't know where they are. I don't know what they do. And I would think they're starting to think about that too.
Yeah, I mean, but who wants to trade with the 49ers knowing that they're keeping the gang together? There's a great chance that they're going to be picking in the early 30s in 20.
We're going to suck. Come on. We're going to do terrible.
What I would want is the 49ers 2026 first round pick, because that pick might be higher than the 25 pick, because I kind of see post 2024 season being sort of like the 2014 season, where you just see a lot of guys go. A lot of guys retiring, a lot of the 49ers shedding a lot of big salaries. That might be the pivot year for the 49ers. I would want the 49ers draft pick the year after that.
It's interesting. You know, that could be Trent Williams. It could be Deebo Samuel. I've already speculated that Armstead might have to redo his deal this offseason, or he might get cut. Like, yeah, that's when these 28, 29, 30-year-olds – Hargrave, could they move off of that contract? He will not be young. I don't think they plan on stinking, but yeah, that's the year things could turn a little bit. And they're going to need, that's another reason why you keep Ayuk, because he's one guy who would be getting better at that point still.
Yeah, mid-20s guy.
Yeah, if you move off of Ayuk and then you move off of those guys, who do you have left? Who's their stars in their 20s?
Ayuk. You got Bosa, you got Fred Warner, you've got Ayuk. That's the core right there. That's good. I mean, you can build around that for sure. But what you're saying underscores the importance of this draft, because you probably do have to replace Deebo. You probably do have to replace Trent Williams. You probably do have to replace Arik Armstead. No, by the way, Javon Hargrave is the same age as Armstead is. Mm-hmm. So your 2 starting defensive tackles are in their early 30s. I mean, that's the counter argument to pushing all your chips in and getting that left tackle, because it'd be nice to have a good wide receiver in the pipeline. It'd be good to have a defensive tackle. It's a good defensive tackle draft in the pipeline. By the way, they have no defensive ends besides Nick Bosa. Drake Jackson has not been good. Robert Beal, I mean, I can't remember a play that Robert Beal Jr. made all season long. I'm not saying he's not going to be good, but you certainly can't rely on him. So these are all spots that, boy, you could use a good guy, a good young guy in the pipeline. It's a good draft. So I don't know what they're going to do. They have options, but they have a lot of business that they need to take care of.
Could they trade anybody, Barrows? Is there we talked maybe cuts, but like, is there somebody they can trade to get a second or a third round pick back?
trade Brock Purdy, you could get.
Yeah, that's not the
still set up the deal. No, I mean,
You got me there. Trick Brock Purdy.
Debo Samuel, you know, you trade Debo Samuel and you incur this huge cap hit. You know, that's what happens when you keep kind of redoing these deals over and over again. You make these guys uncuttable. You also make them untradeable. So I don't think so. I mean, Ayuk would be, as you said, I mean, guys in their mid-20s, that's who you would want. That's what could fetch a king's ransom of draft picks. But that's what you see bad teams doing. This is a team that thinks that it can win the Super Bowl. So they're going to keep those guys together as long as they can.
All right, pals, you already got me thinking about the big Tear It Up podcast we're going to do at the end of next season. So a long, long tease for that one. The 49ers redo when all these players are gone and retire, quit. And Barris and I will keep going, though. We're going to keep going with it. Well, I don't know. Maybe you will. Maybe I won't. But we'll see how it is. And I might be a salary cap cut by that point.
We'll see. Maybe we'll both retire. Yeah, we'll have a dual press conference.
Oh man, the controversy that will come from. How can they be replaced? How can they possibly be replaced? All right, Barris, we've ended this on a dark note, but that's okay. Things are always in flux. We'll keep our finger on it for as long as we're both employed.
All right, sounds good. We'll do our big draft press conference. Oh, we got free agency press podcast to do at some point.
That's right. We'll do that. We'll do that next week, maybe, or the week after. Who knows? We'll figure it out. All right.
We'll make you do the build your roster.
I stay out of that
exercise, and then you can discuss how you, Tim Kawakami, have built the 49ers for 2024.
It much more will be going over Barros's, because I don't get into those kind of sheets. I read them. I'm not doing them. I kind of know the general way to do this. I'm not going to go through the. I'm not one of those guys, but. You will do it, and we'll talk about it. It'll be fascinating. All right, Barris.
All right, talk to you soon. Bye.
Over there.